and welcome to Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. I'm Jeremy Wartzman.
I'm Bianca Bremham.
And I'm Lara Chan Baker.
Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast from the Jackie Winter Group, which is a creative production and representation studio based in Melbourne and New York City. What originally started as a business conference for artists and fellow creatives is now being turned around to shine a light on our clients. From art buyers and creative teams to fellow producers and managers, this podcast is all about offering a glimpse into the work we do as the bridge between clients and creatives. It's an ongoing exploration of how to wrangle the creative process to achieve excellence, no matter what the medium. On today's episode, we take a look at influencers and influencer marketing. Who are these mysterious beasts, and how do you find one? Should you find one? And what are some of the risks and rewards involved? Before we get in, we'll just check in with our lovely panel here. How is everyone going?
Really good. I'm excited. I'm preparing to go to Toowoomba.
What happens in Toowoomba?
I don't know, but that's what I'm going to find out. I'm very excited. The weather's better than Melbourne. That's what I know.
Opening up our new investigative reporting wing of Jackie Winter.
That's it. Jackie Winter Toowoomba.
And Bianca. You know what? By the time this episode airs, I'm super excited because we are going to be about to celebrate the 10-year anniversary of Jackie Winter, which I'm very excited about.
I think this episode will probably air on the 10-year anniversary, which was, I'm trying to figure out when I'm counting it from. I'm counting it from the first blog post, which I have dug it out from the archive, the Internet Archive, the Wayback Machine, which I think was on September 7th, 2007, which is, crazy. But yeah, we're very excited for our party. We're excited to see what happens when the two worlds of both Jackie Winters kind of collide. Jackie Winter, the band, who does our amazing music and is an incredible musician, and Jackie Winter, the business, together at last.
10 years waiting for this collaboration.
Will the fabric of space-time be completely torn?
Yes.
I feel like that's kind of, I mean, we're talking about collaborations. We're talking about like influences and collaborations today. So this is going to be the culmination of both of those things.
Well, before we get into that, we should go into some of the mini topics that have come across our Slack in the past week. B, this is one that you put in. It was a piece from Artsy, which is, just a phenomenal site kind of that goes over kind of happenings in the more contemporary fine art world. And this is about how artists are bypassing their dealers and selling directly to collectors. Why did you put this in there?
Well, I just thought it was interesting that, I mean, Lara, you actually commented, I can't believe this hasn't happened earlier. I mean, we are in the age of, I guess, being so connected on the internet and so connected digitally that, yeah, I mean, maybe this is a topic for another episode. Do you actually need a gallery in order to sell fine art work?
I think galleries definitely still have a place. I mean, in terms of showcasing the work and providing a space for that. In terms of selling it, not necessarily. Although those things are intrinsically linked. But it's interesting. And I mean, I guess at one point in time, snagging a gallery or a dealer was a really like crucial moment in the progression of a fine artist's career.
Well, I think it's similar to what we were talking about last week about publishing. It's like, you know, to actually like that moment of, you know, having a publisher publish your book is a really exciting moment, and having a gallery show your work is a similar thing.
But yeah, again, like publishing, like being able to receive 100% of the money and have creative control is pretty alluring to a lot of people.
You get in some pretty deep territory here, though, when you're talking about the fine art world and how kind of value is ascribed to those pieces, because it is such a it's so super subjective. And I guess one of the critiques of the fine art world that I've kind of come across is that the works themselves have no value, but it's how much kind of the dealers and the galleries kind of set for those works and kind of creating this false economy in some kind of ways. So yeah, the idea of, I guess, artists kind of selling directly questions a lot of those assumptions of how that kind of economy works.
One of the things though that I thought was interesting that one of the people they interviewed pointed out was that with galleries in particular, like, they have to sort of incur the debt of creating works before they've even found a buyer with like gallery shows, compared to like if they just sort of if they're commissioned for pieces, it's a bit different.
Look, I mean, I think this is just one area where I think it's interesting reading about other disciplines that might not kind of be advertising or illustration or animation, because these things about how creatives can interact directly with the people who are commissioning and purchasing their work is a worthwhile discussion.
Totally.
Speaking of selling direct to customers, we learned last week that Apple has set aside $1 billion to produce original TV shows and content. This is pretty interesting. I don't know. Have you guys seen Apple's kind of initial foray into content?
They got this carpool karaoke. They did that show.
Well, that's not. They bought that.
They bought that.
They had this this kind of Shark Tank one, like the Battle of the Apps one, and then they got this coming up with The Rock and Siri.
I think part of the billion is going towards buying as well as producing original content. But I mean, like the article points out, it sounds like huge, but even with an annual budget of $1 billion. They'd be like trailing behind the budgets of Netflix and Amazon and HBO. But I guess they're just testing the waters. It was interesting, like $1 billion makes barely a dent in their revenue. Like they would not even notice $1 billion gone. So they can quite comfortably test this out.
Yeah, well, it's going to be a real interesting few weeks for Apple. They just actually announced today that their September 12th event for new phones that everyone is looking forward to. So, it'll be interesting to see what they decide to do with that. But again, just how, I guess, the overall structure of how creative content is being kind of commissioned and produced is changing kind of so much. And I guess, how kind of creatives and creative businesses decide to interact and pursue that work, this is definitely relevant too. But also, we are really three camera ready people, and so we're just putting it out there.
Yeah, we're too pretty for radio.
Exactly. We need to break that fourth wall down. And finally, this is kind of a bit of a recurring theme in our link pack, but it came up when talking about transparency in companies kind of putting their information out there for people to see. This is one of my favorites, and this is an amazing app that I really love called Cushion. I recommend it to a lot of our artists for all the non-agency work that they do. It's kind of like it's a freelance kind of companion app, and it's really great for keeping track of jobs and to kind of know, well, this kind of cushion of timing and money of kind of what's coming and helping you manage cash flow and time. It's kind of like a work forecasting app. But what they've done with the app, which I really love, is they actually kind of go down and kind of list what they've kind of spent money on and why they spent it, and then kind of where they have recurring costs, why they kind of stopped it or went to another service or things like that.
Complete transparency on their running costs. It's pretty novel. Like, I haven't seen anyone else release information quite like this. It's fascinating to read through.
It is fascinating to read through. This is another way that I like to find other kind of apps as well, because I love seeing kind of the different stacks that other businesses use. So it was interesting that, like, not only seeing the cost, but kind of what they use under the hood. So this is kind of the hosting company they use, or this is kind of the type foundries that they use, and how much that costs. So yeah, I love knowing how much things cost. That's one of my biggest beefs with kind of enterprise software and anything like that, where like if you don't have a price listed on it, it's like you probably can't afford it. But still, it's good to kind of know to set those kind of markers out. Cool. We will put all of these links into our show notes as we do every week at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz.
And where can people sign up for the newsletter of those links, Jeremy?
We do maintain a tiny letter. It comes out every Friday. It's just kind of a dump of all of our show notes, as well as an announcement that the episode is ready to download. And that is at tinyletter.com/jackiewinter. Getting stuck into our only topic today is influencer marketing. It's a very popular and emerging method of marketing that has only been strengthened by the popularity of social media. But what is an influencer? What do they do? How do you get one? Should you get one? It's a really interesting topic, I think, for us, because there is a big crossover with influencers and creatives. I think there's... there's definitely a huge component of people creating interesting visual work and kind of the influencer sphere. And we have spoken on the podcast previously of engaging artists as kind of talent. But I thought this is something that we would talk about in a bit more detail. It's something that is coming up kind of more and more. And it's something that I don't really personally kind of know how to grapple with. It's something that I kind of look at and it I don't know how to quite feel about it, you know, because there's a lot to unpack in terms of, okay, these are people who are kind of famous for being famous and kind of that's it. And then there's this other kind of aspect of, I guess, the social graph and social feed kind of being exploited in different ways. So I thought there's a bit to unpack, but I think let's start out by actually trying to define what influencer marketing actually is at the moment. So B, what is an influencer?
I mean, if you think about it as simply as possible, it's an influential person. So that can kind of come in many different forms, but it's someone with, I guess, a certain amount of clout and engagement with their fans or followers, or like a big audience. So someone that has a big following and they're able to influence their following.
How?
I guess the influencers that we're talking about are really like social media influencers. So someone that is considered a thought leader in their niche or their area of expertise, and someone that has the ability to, in influencer marketing, to actually influence the opinion or buying decisions of a target audience, largely thanks to their social media following and the trust that the people that enjoy their work or that enjoy their opinion or trust their opinion put in them. So I mean, I think we're kind of in the age of authenticity at the moment, and brands really want to capitalize on that. So influencer marketing is one way to do that.
In some ways, what you're saying is that they're the human equivalent of a billboard, the human embodiment of an advertisement in some ways as well. Because if you say, okay, what is the purpose of an ad? That is literally to influence you to do something or to kind of make some behavior.
Well, there's that episode of Community where the guy's like name is Subway, and like his whole thing is to just promote Subway. Have like bought this guy.
That is not a kind of new thing. That has kind of happened a lot, like especially with casinos and online casinos, you know. But anyway, we'll come
digress.
Back.
We'll digress.
Yeah, I mean, but I think for us, like, I mean, we all grew up with, I guess, in the era of Britney Spears selling Pepsi or things like that. And I think like over the years, that maybe way of marketing to people has been weakened, and people really want to, you know, go to their friend to, you know, like someone that you trust is going to be someone that you're more likely to buy from. And so we've kind of had this like growth over the last couple of years of people that are between a celebrity and a real person that are able to actually...
That's a really good way of describing it.
Able to, engage a market and be able to sell to it. And, you know, the advertising industry over the last couple of years has caught on to that and has wanted to exploit that. Because, I guess these people are attractive because they're relatable. And
often just attractive.
Well, I mean, they have like, I mean, and sometimes they have like an engaged, like a very large engaged but niche market that is more targeted than, say, putting a billboard out or putting an advertisement on television. Like, it's, you're actually able to talk to people that are the target market, and you're able to kind of like leverage an audience that is the target market of actually what you're selling, rather than just kind of like throwing out this blanket approach and throwing out this blanket advertising campaign. You're kind of able to target it via these influencers that have this audience, and they have this engaged fan base of people that trust their opinion.
But then there's more. So, I mean, you're talking about this idea of code. Okay, this is, I guess, a bit of an evolution of the spokesperson and going from, I guess, more kind of mass media to more kind of niche interest and niche media. That's, I guess, influencers on an individual level. But then that can broaden out a bit more to now cover groups or shared accounts and things like that. B, can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess our clients are generally coming to us because they want to partner with a specific artist to leverage that artist's name and social influence for a campaign. But there's definitely situations where an influencer is a group of people, or it's a shared social media account that's actually curating other people's work, as opposed to being a creator that's creating work themselves. And a good example of that I can think of is an Instagram account called The Good Type, which features inspiring typography and lettering from around the world. And that's a great example of an influential curator. So that's a group of people. I think it's actually two people. It was founded back in 2013, not by letterers that actually create lettering or typography themselves, but by type and lettering enthusiasts as a way to share their love for the lettering arts. And that Instagram account has over 800,000 followers, and while they're technically not creating anything new, as curators, they're being valued for their eye and their taste, which is just as valuable as a creator. And, you know, they've, from what I understand, have branched out to build a career from sharing other people's content, and from curating like a really beautiful feed, and from having a really great eye for a certain niche in the market. And they've expanded their offering into things like hosting lettering workshops and writing books and stuff like that. So yeah, that's, I guess, an example of not an individual creator, but a curator, which might be a group of people.
At its core, the proposition is pretty straightforward. Brands are looking for people who have large followings of engaged, you know, of an engaged audience in a specific kind of area. And then it's pretty much pay to play from there. So they are going to be, you know, either paying you to do a post about their product directly, or it's a bit more kind of abstract. There might be things where, you know, it's so subtle you might not even know that it kind of is an ad. Or, you know, it might have, like, it might have kind of nothing to do with it as well. Like, so whether it's kind of clothing, destinations,
makeup, food.
Exactly. I mean, it crosses pretty much every industry. And I think that if you look at kind of, I mean, what people want, that people want to expose other people kind of to their brands and to their products. And when you have kind of a billboard, you have to say like, okay, this billboard's in this location, X amount of thousand people are going to walk by it. Hopefully it'll kind of stick with that many people. But if you kind of are looking at a person and their kind of audience, like, yeah, you, and considering them as literally the kind of this manifestation of this billboard, that X amount of people are walking by, it's really about getting, you know, getting into the really kind of getting into the weeds and kind of trying to target people as effectively as possible. So, you know, this is a process that I guess is, can have a huge amount of benefit. It can also backfire in spectacular ways. Laura, this is something that, you know, you've been into as a producer, but also as our token millennial in the office as well.
There are many token millennials in here. I am not the youngest in this office, Jeremy. I'm the youngest in this room, but...
Well, Laura, take us through, I guess, some of the more the pros and cons that have kind of emerged from
this. We'll start with some of the pros, shall we? Yeah, I mean, look, you guys covered a lot there, but as Bianca started with, the basic sort of tenet is that when it's done right, a message feels far more authentic coming from someone that the audience trusts, and that can increase sales, you know, far more than traditional marketing avenues. And as consumers, we trust a third party's review, and we're more inclined to try something for ourselves after living vicariously through the influencers' experience.
Three times.
Jeremy, even you mentioned the other day that you need to hear something.
Three times
from people, from, you know, three different people that you trust and that you're engaged with before you sort of try something yourself. So it clearly works. And I mean, influencers become influencers because they earn that trust of their, you know, readers or viewers or whatever it is, and impact their decision making. So, you know, why not tap into that? And I think influencer marketing is particularly attractive for newcomers fighting their way into a hyper competitive market, which is, you know, populated with heavy hitters and well-known brands. You can really get a huge bump in brand awareness by tapping into the right influencers. I guess, you know, one positive blog review or, you know, several glowing social media mentions by the right people can catapult unknown products into the national even international spotlight, like overnight.
Yeah, like one of my favorite podcasts, How I Built This, they were talking about, you know, that baby company, Aeneas, and I don't know what the other one is. But yeah, basically they were saying, you know, create this company, and all of a sudden Princess... God, I'm not good at names this morning. But yeah, that one princess came out like with like her baby wrapped in it, and like that pretty much catapulted the whole company.
And you guys touched on this, but once upon a time, consumers could nearly all be reached with television ads. But modern audiences, on the other hand, are totally fragmented between dozens of channels. So influencer marketing can enable you to target a really specific type of person that fits your brand and your product, and, you know, and leverage that influencer's existing following without having to establish the same level of trust and involvement yourself from scratch. You know, and if customers as well are entering the sales funnel through an influencer, they're likely, or studies show that they're likely to be much more ready to make a purchase than a typical customer. So influencer marketing can sort of reduce the time for a customer to get all the way down your sales funnel because potential customers have already heard someone they trust like singing your praises.
This actually comes back to an article that I read on Mumbrella last week titled Your Press Release is My Spam, which is actually written by someone who runs an influencer marketing agency, basically saying how PR companies are now targeting all of their invites towards influencers. And it's like giving them all this kind of free product, expecting that they're going to, I guess, do similar kind of things. But now it's like this is comes back to our working for free argument. It's like that used to be something that was a bit of a novel approach. And now by sending free things to someone, you actually are kind of asking them to work for free because their platform has, you know, this higher value now. So
well, that's it. And because of that, you know, people are aware of that now. Influencer marketing can come with some pretty significant risk. Things can backfire, you know. The actual implementation of an influencer marketing campaign is often a pretty complicated, expensive, you know, pretty highly time-consuming endeavor. It's a marketing strategy that has like a big potential payoff, but it can come with some hefty demands. I mean, you're relying on the authenticity, reach and commitment of one person or one group of people who is totally outside of your company, doesn't necessarily share the same goals. You know, so it's vital that the influencers you engage with are actually relevant to your audience and committed to the, you know, doing what it is you need them to do, or it's wasted money, really. And, you know, depending on your agreement with the influencer, you'll have a varying amount of control over what they actually say about your product. So sometimes influencer marketing purely involves, as you said, just sending out free product to someone without actually necessarily sponsoring any posts. And so in those instances, you're really leaving it to the whim of the person and trusting that they'll like your product enough, well, to share it at all, and then also to say something good about it.
What are some other kind of risks involved that you've come across?
Yeah, well, like leading off from what I was saying there, like if you do have some say over what they're posting, well, you have to be really careful that you don't fiddle with it so much that you destroy the authentic voice that you're paying for in the first place. I think like in the end, it is their network and they know best how to work it. But even if you have a written agreement and they adhere to the letter, an influencer may never be sufficiently passionate enough about your product to actually generate buzz or get anyone interested. So you sort of have to devote enough time up front to developing those relationships with your influencers that turns them into sort of natural enthusiastic evangelists of, you know, of some sort. But that won't always happen. And when it doesn't, again, you've sort of potentially wasted time and money and resources. And the other thing I was reading a lot about that makes it really risky is that it's really hard to measure the effects of influencer marketing because generally you won't actually have any access to their accounts or anything, right? So you don't have those direct tracking capabilities for their posts like you would normally. So traditionally that would allow you to sort of attribute success or lack thereof to that sort of marketing ploy. I suppose you could sort of set up like a custom landing page for influencers, you know, with set links so you can sort of gauge how much traffic they're driving. But really that would only capture a pretty small portion of traffic. And that doesn't always help if you're aiming for as well a hard to measure metric like brand awareness. So it's hard to know if your money is actually going anywhere. I think as well the other major issue with the rise of professional influencers is that there's also a rise of consumer mistrust. It used to be a pretty authentic novel way of advertising, and it's less and less so now. So as this tactic increases in popularity, consumers also have an increasingly keen eye for this stuff. And they will often abandon people who seem overly tainted by the scent of, you know, third-party advertising and marketing. So if this happens to an influencer that you've been wooing, you're basically back to square one. And again, as well, given the increase in this sort of paid promotion, the legalities around it have been updated as well. You mentioned this as well, you know, sort of legal bodies are still figuring out how best to deal with this. But just this year, the Australian Association of National Advertisers brought in new guidelines that say that social media influencers have to clearly label any sponsored content. So, you know, in some ways that can really defeat the purpose of why you chose to go down the path of influencer marketing in the first place. However, I think if you do choose the right influencer, someone whose followers understand that paid posts are a part of their income, but that they only do so for products that they truly believe in, then that issue can, you know, be bypassed. And that's something to be really careful about. Another thing I came across was, you know, something to be really conscious of is that if an influencer suddenly crashes and burns for whatever reason, if they're involved in some sort of scandal, you know, then so are you some of the time. You can get dragged down with them. And it can also just be really expensive. You know, top influencers more and more are now really aware of what they're worth and their unique potential to have like a really enormous impact on your campaign that no other sort of form of marketing can. So as people become more fluent in this area of income and the demand is higher, then costs are driven up. And you know, speaking of demand, Jeremy, you touched on this as well. The chances are that you're not going to be the only brand that the influencer has under their wing. Again, it depends on your exclusivity agreements, but other companies will also have their eyes set on them most likely. And while you can include sort of non-competes, you can't really be assured that your brand's going to stand out among all the brands that they're already associated with. And then lastly, I just wanted to touch on, you know, how do you even know if the following or market that an influencer claims is actually even real? Ad News had a piece that we were all sort of giggling about the other day, but it's really interesting at how fake influencer accounts are scamming advertisers, and it's pretty easy to do. But anyway, when done right, there are loads of pros, but there's also a butt ton of cons. Am I allowed to say butt ton on the podcast?
I give you permission.
Thank you. There's a butt ton of cons.
But I think like going like Lara talking about like, I guess like maybe manipulating the market and the manipulating followers. I can't sleep most nights. I have terrible insomnia and I love looking at memes. You know how much I love tagging you.
Oh,
memes.
I know. You give me the good memes, Bianca. Good memes I need.
But I mean, like going back to, I guess, like these, like the difference between like a creator and a curator, you've got these meme accounts that kind of like share other people's content. That brings up something where, you know, you have the monetization of other people's content, which is something that is probably not for this episode, but like for another episode, because that's quite, I guess, a controversial area. But there's this fascinating group that like these top meme admins, like your Sunny Side Up, Fuck Jerry, they're part of this phenomenon called the meme cartel, which is like this group of influential memers on Instagram that actually use each other to manipulate. It sounds ridiculous, but like they use each other. They have like, you know, like a WhatsApp group. They're like all the way like different, like stationed in different parts of the world, that they have this WhatsApp group that like they use each other to manipulate the viral success of each other's content. Which is kind of fascinating.
Like the meme Illuminati.
Yeah, I mean, Illuminati. It is. And like, I, you know, they kind of like come together. Like I'll post a link to this like yahoo.com article, which kind of goes into it a little bit. But like they use each other to, you know, like shout out each other's accounts and kind of like manipulate like how successful their content is, which is all kind of like moving towards the goal of being able to then monetize their account and then do sponsored posts and that sort of thing. Like, I find that incredibly fascinating.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, well, look, that's a separate discussion in terms of what the role of memes actually kind of has in our life, not just kind of, you know, culturally, but, you know, and politically as well. That's kind of a big part
huge
of,
topic.
You know, fringe movements as well. But look, I mean, I think one of the big reasons we want to talk about this as well is the kind of crossover from artist to influencer as well. I mean, we work with the huge cross-section of artists, some who have incredibly large followings that come off the strength of the quality of their work in that kind of way. And I think, yeah, like everyone who's kind of in a marketing position kind of, you know, wants to use, find influencers like in this way because it kind of can expand their reach. There's this whole idea of kind of micro influencers as well. So really kind of taking this kind of media spend and kind of dividing it into much kind of smaller areas. But I guess it really kind of tickles my cynical side in so many ways because it really kind of is, it feels like it's reducing kind of people and especially creative people like to literally billboards. Like, okay, this person isn't like this person. They are their Instagram followers. And we had a creative brief come through the other month and like it was going to be perfect for like this one or two artists that we had in mind, but they want it. It's like now it's not just a matter of how good the art is, but it's like, okay, well, what was their Instagram following? And we couldn't put this artist forward because it didn't meet this kind of arbitrary number. And that really, I don't know, got my goat. And I think that especially like in Instagram as a medium, like which is, I think, one of the most engaging and most addictive in lots of ways.
I think it's the most relevant for us because it's a visual medium.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, well, like, look, the saying goes that, like, you know, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And I think that, well, I can deal with kind of a sponsored post, like, you kind of know it's sponsored and like it's kind of a necessary evil now to get it. But then to have that secondary layer where I feel like I'm also being advertised like to by people, you know, who I'm following because of you know, getting their unfiltered view. Also, I don't know, like you said, Laura, like it's, you know, you could smell it kind of a mile away. And I like ads, and I don't mind kind of seeing ads, knowing that they're ads, because that's what advertising is. And obviously, this is coming from someone who's an advertising insider or works in the industry. So a certain amount of passion there. So I know that other people kind of see it in different ways. But I like this idea of maybe taking a more kind of old school approach, where if you find someone, like if you really want to get an influencer, like commission someone to do work for you, like it, like for an actual kind of ad. Another reason this has kind of come up is because actually just yesterday I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, the Slate Culture Gabfest, where they were doing a review of this film called Ingrid Goes West. Has anyone heard about this or seen a trailer for it?
No.
I'll give you a brief synopsis. It's a movie from first-time director Matt Spicer, and it's Aubrey Plaza and Elizabeth Olsen are in it. So Aubrey Plaza is an unhinged social media stalker with a history of confusing likes for meaningful relationships. Elizabeth Olsen is an Instagram famous influencer whose perfectly curated boho chic lifestyle becomes Ingrid's latest obsession. When Ingrid moves to LA and manages to insinuate herself into the social media star's life, the relationship quickly goes from BFF to WTF. Anyway,
this sounds fantastic.
It does. So it's obviously something that is, I guess, really kind of enter the mainstream if there is a film kind of being
definitely
made out of it. And I think it's it's something that is evolving as quick as the industry itself. So we're really keen to hear any other, you know, hot takes you might have. Email us at podcast@jackiewinter.com. We'd love to hear what other people think, and if there's things that we missed, because, you know, we'll come back and do round two on a few of these topics later on in the year. Otherwise, we will put all of these links to our articles and businesses in our show notes. I think that'll do us for now. Wrapping up as we do every week, talking about the most Melbourne and the most New York thing that we've seen this week. Bianca, what do you got?
Well, apart from us just having to sit here for 2 minutes while we waited for a siren to...
That was pretty good.
No, I mean, that's the most... I have like a bit low on New York things this week, but I have eaten a bagel every single morning and it has been fantastic.
Oh, that's glorious.
Oh, so good. What's your favorite bagel combination, Jeremy?
Look, I have very strong feelings about this, but yeah, I did work at a bagel store for a very long time. I'll do some buzz marketing for Bagel Plaza in South Merrick, New York. Bar none, the best bagels in the world. I don't care what anyone says, but yeah, their everything bagels are just amazing. You get their everything bagel.
Oh, you've got to get the everything bagel.
Well done. Cream cheese, smoked salmon, red onion. And yes,
Jeremy, I'm so, you know how hungry I am right now. Stop.
Okay. Laura, what's the most Melbourne thing?
I was at the dog park the other day and I met a golden retriever called Bruce. And I thought that was very Melbourne.
Why is that?
Bruce? Yeah. No one outside of Australia would call their dog Bruce.
That is pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Okay. Thank you, Bianca.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Jeremy.
This has been Jackie Winter Gives You the Business. Jackie Winter Gives You the Business is a weekly podcast about creative project management and production and just making things happen in general. Our producer is Areej Noor. You can find the Jackie Winter Group on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, etc. at Jackie Winter. That's Jackie with a Y and Winter like the season. And you can email us with any recommendations, feedback, questions, or comments at podcast@jackiewinter.com. Archives of all of our shows and show notes can be found at jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz, as well as our tiny letter at tinyletter.com/JackieWinter, which distributes our show notes every Friday right before our episode is released. Our theme music is by Melbourne-based musician Jackie Winter. You can check out his stuff on soundcloud.com/JackieWinter. If you love what you hear, you can help us out by subscribing on iTunes, rating us, and commenting too. Details on our website, jackiewinter.givesyouthe.biz. Thanks for listening. Catch you next week. Bye-bye. And so she holds a flame, but it's just cellophane blowing in the wind. Just wait for that siren to finish.
I love the sirens in the background. It's so New York. New York. I have practice. Coffee. I don't even drink coffee.
Come the fuck on, sirens.
I'm walking here. record in here.